TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I have some advice for you before we saddle up today. Don't skip good hot dogs when you can get them.
Chris, I think that is phenomenal advice, especially as we're recording. It is about to be the 4th of July here in the U.S., which means that couldn't be better advice for where we are right now, because no, you do not skip good hot dogs when you can get them, whether it's at a ball game or maybe it's a dirty water dog in New York City or Chicago style. I mean, there's so many great choices there. Chili dog, whatever. Don't skip a good hot dog. That, I mean, Chris, I feel like we're done. You know, we've given everybody the best advice we can, and we will talk to you next week.
Well, I feel like that is an excellent idea for a Star Trek time travel episode where they beam down to different cities looking for something, and they try the hot dogs in every city that they visit.
That's really just what the Department of Temporal Investigations does, mm-hmm. is it just travels to the different time periods and tries the hot dogs. See how they taste.
Yeah, yeah. That's an excellent idea. All right, everyone. We are going to not only eat hot dogs today, but we're going to talk about the third episode of season two of Strange New Worlds, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. And here is a very quick rundown of the story. While going about a routine day aboard the Enterprise, La'an encounters a strange guy who has wandered into the corridor. He's been shot in the past, and he needs La'an to go back in time and stop the attack, or else history will be changed. Her companion for the mission? None other than James T. Kirk. But not that Kirk. Well, not exactly. The duo of officers from different timelines travel back to TV's New York City, aka Toronto, and figure out what event splits the timeline, track down who is responsible, and enjoy hot dogs along the way. But at the end of the journey, awaits a child. Bum, bum, bum! Cue that music, Matthew, because we did get a little twist here at the end of the story, but let's not start there. Let's just start with your maybe general thoughts about doing a time travel story again.
Well, I thought this was interesting. You know, I think specifically off of the fact that we had just, at the end of the season, we had the time travel story there with Captain Pike. And so for us to do this, I think, you know, was an interesting choice, and to involve La'an in it, especially, I think, with, you know, who she is and what we know, a little bit of her history, obviously, with that last name and how all that figures in. Mm-hmm. And so to tell this story with her, I thought was a very interesting choice. And I would say it was something that I had no idea was coming, really. I did mm-hmm. not expect this to be the story that we got here. And so I liked this idea. And I think that what was interesting is what they do here is something that's so similar to a lot of other classic Star Trek time travel stories.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I think that this is pretty good in that sense. And again, I think the thing that really struck me was the fact that we were where we go with this story. It makes so much sense mm-hmm. to do it with this character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think jumping ahead, and then I'm going to rewind, the whole thing with Khan, I've seen some people complaining online, because that's what you do online. Oh, who asked for more Khan? I wish they'd just stop with the Khan. Khan again? But you kind of knew that when you name a character La'an Noonien Singh, that at some point they were probably going to visit her heritage and the fact that she has some relation right. to Khan beyond asking her about it like they did in the previous episode. So I wasn't surprised. And the way that they used Khan, I thought was, it's interesting from a philosophical standpoint, which we can talk about when we get to the Khan part. As for the time travel aspect of the story, though, yeah, it's fun. We sort of had a time travel. I mean, we did have a time travel, but the quality of Mercy at the end of season one is a little bit of a different type of time travel story because you're still, it's like an alternate history and it's playing out in the same time period. But here you've got the one where they actually go back into the past, and it feels like another thing that every Star Trek series has to do. And my first time through watching this one was interesting because the ride was sort of like it, you had to build up some speed
right.
until you finally got into that Dodge. Was it a Dodge Challenger?
Yes.
Hellcat.
Yeah.
Is that right? Until you got there, you know, you're kind of building up speed. And actually in my notes, I have a checklist with the little green emoji check marks. Disoriented because things are a bit off.
Yeah.
Land in another time. Need clothes. Escape the authorities. Get rid of uniforms. Need money. So up until that point, it all felt kind of like, okay, these are all the things that we need to do in a Star Trek time travel story. And we're just going down the list and we're doing them. Mm-hmm. And finally, when they got to the moment of needing money, it started to feel different. I love the fact that they used chess as the way that Kirk would make money.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
I even said to myself when my fiance and I are watching it the first time through, and she doesn't have all the Star Trek knowledge in the background at all. And he started playing chess, and I said, he usually plays three-dimensional chess, so this
right.
2D stuff is really a breeze for him. And then after he finishes, he says the same thing, except he calls it idiot's chess, mm-hmm. right? So, but I thought that was a clever way of using something that we know about Kirk's background, but we've never seen before. And so at that point, it started to feel like they were making their own story. And I also felt like at that point that Paul Wesley started to come into the character a little bit more, although I felt like he started doing Chris Pine's Kirk much more so than Shatner's Kirk or his own Kirk. He started really feeling like I could see Chris Pine in this episode actually once he bought the hot dogs.
Right.
And maybe we can talk about that in a bit as well. But that's my quick, just like out of the gate thing. Mm-hmm. And as you go down the checklist, also, search for a nuclear reactor is another one that I put a green check mark by.
Yeah.
And then another one I did, which I think might actually be new, is when you FaceTime in Star Trek. Like, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, this is very
that
true.
That felt like a Ted yep. Lasso moment yeah. to me. Like, we got to use FaceTime, but anyway.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, there's a lot here that we do in previous episodes, right? But I think that they do a good job of allowing us to legitimize, I think, this episode because we're telling this story with the character of La'an. Mm, and yeah. I think that's the thing that really does set this apart from it just being kind of another time travel story. I think that's the thing that really made this worth it in the end. And so I appreciated that, and I'm glad that they did go this way to tell this story with her, because like you said, if you're going to have this character with this last name, you have to do something with it, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I think that by allowing us to actually have this experience with her, it made sense. And so I'm very glad that you know, we did it. And I think they did a great job, in all honesty, of actually doing that. Because this is about digging into La'an, right? And, you know, mm-hmm. there's always, I think, been kind of a separateness to the character anyway in the show so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so yeah. I think one of the things that this allows us to do is to be able to really feel with the character what it's like in some ways to, you know, we have the scene where she's training and trying to let her aggression out. And then we have the scene where, you know, she's with Kirk here and he doesn't know who she is, right? And how that changes her perspective. And so I think that it's really cool that we're doing this. And I think to see Laan live with this weight of feeling like everybody sees her differently, that everybody looks at her through the lens of what her last name is, I think is really powerful, honestly, because, you know, that's a really, really hard place to be. I think anybody who's, you know, if you've had problems with your family or whatever, or you come from a family that has an infamous last name or anything like that, you know, this is a struggle for a lot of people with bad family experiences. So I think that this is a really phenomenal choice in many ways.
Well, and coming off the previous episode where she's specifically asked about her last name, right, and it's connected to what was happening to Una.
Yep.
And what I like, since we're talking about Khan, we can get all this out of the way at this point. What I guess when, not that it was a surprise or anything, but when they look down the corridor and you see the drawings made by children on the walls, and then you see the label with Khan on the door in a child's handwriting, I felt for a split second, I felt like, ah, are we going to have Khan? And it's going to be a kid Khan. And then I'm thinking about the time period as well. But once she interacts with him, and not even the interaction, actually, before that, when Sarah is telling her that you can kill him and you can live your own life. I'm paraphrasing, but you can live your own life and you don't have to carry this baggage around anymore. And Laan tells her, and I might have the word slightly wrong here, but his legacy is genocide and murder and me. And then she goes in after she shoots Sarah, and she goes in and she talks to the little Khan. And yeah, she could have shot him.
Mm-hmm.
She could have told him what the future holds. She doesn't do any of those things. She's really confronting it herself of what it means to her, the baggage that she's carried, how she sees herself when she's coming face to face with the ancestor who is so infamous for what he did for all the people that he killed. But also this episode frames it as, and I don't know if it's ever been this explicitly stated in Star Trek before, apart from maybe in the novels. You might remember those novels better than I do, but the fact that the Federation would have never formed if Khan had never risen to power and ruled over the world, and the Eugenics Wars happened, and all the death and destruction that was brought on by Khan had never happened, that humanity never would have taken the step that ultimately leads them to help form and lead the Federation. And both on a personal level for Laan and on a societal level for humans, pointing out that sometimes very, very terrible things happen because they're a path to something better that benefits billions of people later on, is a reality, an unfortunate reality of how the world works. And to have a figure that's so well known in Star Trek like Khan to be positioned that way in this story as being the linchpin for history in a positive way, ultimately, because normally I would say Khan is positioned as a linchpin in a very negative way.
Yeah. So I think that the thing about this that really struck me was that what we're doing is we're playing the game of philosophy And that one of the most famous philosophical questions that we get is, you know, if you could go back in time, would you kill Hitler?
Yeah.
And so to be asking this question, that's what we're doing. And I think that it's beautiful because the question of killing Khan is a massive question, because do we have to sometimes go, I mean, from a personal perspective to a societal perspective, do we sometimes have to go through great tragedy to be able to get to the great triumph, right? Mm-hmm. It's the question of, like, you know, the Spider-Man series and all, you know, this question has been asked many, many times in our popular culture. And I think what was fascinating is that this really leads to the question of what Kirk says in Star Trek V. I need my pain. And maybe Kirk was right that, and I think he is right. You know, we need our pain. It makes us who we are. It informs who we are. And so therefore, by allowing La'an to be able to see that, yes, in some ways she is shaped by the person of who Khan was, but that doesn't mean that her future has to be that, right? And that she actually makes what her future is going to be. And so I think that's the thing that makes this really, really interesting, because at the end of the episode, and she even says to Kirk, you know, I'm choosing, I think, to let go of this for the first time in her life.
She says, maybe I'm letting go of this now. Yeah.
And so I think that's another really important key to all of this. And so I absolutely loved the fact that we were asking this question, and that it, again, it's her who has to do this, because who else has a more personal reason for wanting this to happen because of the way in which her life has absolutely been affected by this person? Truly, I mean, you know, I don't think it's bad to say in any way, shape, or form that in god-awful ways, right? So I think that this is really what made this episode really, I think, kind of special to me in that sense, and worth doing the time travel, to which I wasn't just in, oh, and then another time travel, episode. Mm-hmm. Yep, we're doing time travel. That's great.
Yeah.
So glad that's happening. This, I think, really made it seem much more legitimate to actually be doing this. And so I loved the question that we got to ask. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And she tells Khan at the very end, again, I might get the word slightly wrong, but she says, I don't know if this will make any sense or if it ever will, but you are right where you need to be, when he asks if she's going to take him away. And the part, I don't know if it ever will, I think was very key, because she's saying, like, in the big picture of history and what's going to happen because of this child and all the people who are going to die, all the strife that the earth is going to go through, still, he's right where he needs to be. And that has to happen to get to the future where things are better. Like, she realizes that the world will have to go through that. And I think she would love to not have to let everyone go through that, but she realizes that it has to happen, just like she realizes for herself that she can let go. First of all, she realizes that she needed Khan, otherwise she would not be here now and would not be who she is.
Yep.
And so it all worked well. And then, like you say, it's not just another time travel story, but I think that they really balanced this episode very, very well. It's very well put together in that it's really fun. There are parts of this episode that are an absolute blast, even if sometimes they're formulaic. I mean, the car chase is fun because you start thinking, how does Kirk know how to drive a car so well?
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to get through a revolving door in a department store because he says, and of all the lines Wesley had in this episode, I think the delivery was best in that scene with the revolving door when she says, never seen a revolving door before? And he says, I'm from space. Like, duh, we don't have revolving doors
right
on the Enterprise. But how does he know how to drive a car so well? But then you think back to the J.J. Abrams, Kelvin first films, and the fact that the young Kirk loved to drive a car. So there's this kind of mixing going on of what we know about Kirk and the idea of taking one person, James T. Kirk, in multiple timelines, not just two, but many timelines, and it's kind of blending it all together. And I like the way that that plays with the idea of the multiverse and the idea that there's an infinite number of copies of everyone out there somewhere or slightly different. Just that, again, it's a scientific idea, but also a philosophical one. And the trip to Vermont and meeting Pelia was a blast. And they used what they established of her in the first episode so well to make this work. And some things that fans complained about with Pelia in the first episode, such as the accent that she's chosen to do, I think really paid off in this episode and made this element of the story work much better than it would have otherwise.
No, I agree. I think all of this really works. You know, the side mission there with Pelia was fun. And again, I think it's really interesting to actually use what we learned about her pretty much right away. You know, the fact that this character is one who has existed on Earth for a very long time. So we said that, and now we're actually going to show that being the case and actually make it a part of the plot, which was very fun. And
she's apparently been on Earth ever since Pythagoras made that math crap up.
Exactly. Exactly. which, you know, I think the thing too that we do here that's really interesting is that we also kind of show that maybe one of the reasons she becomes an engineer and is sparked into that is because of this experience, possibly.
Exactly.
You know,
I think they totally imply that.
So I think, you know, all of that really works. And so you mentioned, though, something that, you know, just Kirk and utilizing Kirk. And so I really wanted to talk to you about, you know, I think a lot of fans were worried about the idea of them using Kirk, having some kind of romance with La'an. How's this all going to fit in canon? Yada, yada, yada. So how did you feel about the way in which they utilized this character in this episode and basically answered, I think, most of the questions that people had or would have been worried about? And I think really ameliorate all that.
Yeah, Kirk, it's an interesting one for me because I'm still not sold on Wesley in this casting as Kirk because he doesn't quite feel like Kirk to me. And I don't mean that I need him to be Shatner or I need him to be Chris Pine, who I think does a very, very good job with Kirk. But there's some charisma that Kirk has and that Shatner and Pine both have that I don't feel Wesley quite has. And so I'm trying to see if he's going to grow into the role. And in terms of Wesley playing Kirk, and then I'll get to the character and how the character himself is used. So far, they've gotten away with it because, except for the FaceTime moment at the end of this episode, we've only been seeing alternate timeline Kirks. And it's very easy to dismiss something that doesn't feel quite right because, well, this isn't Kirk. You know, this is not our prime timeline Kirk. So that it makes sense. He'll be a little bit different. I'm curious to see where he goes with the character when he appears next time. Within the episode, I felt like I was watching him find the role because by the midpoint, as I mentioned earlier, and through to the end, I think he really felt like Kirk. I think he did things I would expect Kirk to do, going all the way back to the original series. And his approach to things, his mannerisms, his attitudes and all, I think felt pretty good to me. So that was an interesting little ride with Kirk that I took in this episode. As for the character of Kirk himself in the story, it made sense for a lot of reasons to have him in here, and I think none of them have to do with having a romance with La'an, other than the romantic element. Maybe you could take that as a mirror of Kirk and Edith Keeler in The City on the Edge of Forever. And of course, this episode does mirror that ending in a sense of in which Kirk has to die as opposed to Edith. But I think that the connection with Khan made sense for Kirk to be the person that comes back with La'an in this episode. If you think about who else would have come back with her, where you would have a situation where the two main characters in this story both have a very personal connection to Khan Noonien Singh.
Right.
And so that made a lot of sense to me. And also the Romulan element, which I thought was very clever in how they worked it into the story. And Adrienne Kane, this actress who plays Sarah, was fantastic. Her performance was, I thought, was really spectacular. But having Kirk's connection to Romulans in the original series and have that be an element in the story where Kirk encounters Romulan worked as well. So I think that they used Kirk as well. I also thought at the beginning of the episode, because I didn't see this coming, and because I know there was a photo leaked of them shooting this in Toronto last year, I think, but I didn't really anticipate the type of story we were going to get here. And so when I saw La'an and Kirk together at the beginning of the episode, and then they go back in time together, I wasn't quite sure how I felt about it. But by the end, yeah, I think for me, it worked really well. And using Kirk in this way, because he's from an alternate future, it doesn't impact canon or the Kirk we know or anything, really.
No, I mean, and of course, this is also an episode that mirrors City on the Edge of Forever, and yet this is, it's Kirk that has to die this time. So I think that, and two, I mean, you know, him being willing to sacrifice himself.
I think Romulans, they have t-shirts that say that. Kirk must die.
Probably do.
They're quite popular in Romulus.
Very popular. So no, I 100% agree with you on that, Chris. And so I think the fact that we're dealing with this temporal interference, you know, we see this whole other timeline, we're dealing with a Romulan temporal agent akin to kind of what we saw in the temporal Cold War. They've actually created these computers apparently to tell them the best time to strike the Federation so they can have the least amount of resistance, which is interesting. All of this kind of leads to the fact that we're in the 21st century here and Space Seed has not happened yet. What we learn about the eugenics wars, which we know started in the early 90s, haven't happened yet. And so everything's been shifted. Now, Aaron Waltke, who is the executive producer of Star Trek Prodigy, had said that he felt like maybe some of the ripples from the temporal Cold War had shifted things from the prime timeline.
Yeah, which they say in this episode, actually. It's part of the dialogue. Yeah.
But you can say that, but it still doesn't change the fact that TOS, in TOS, the timeline doesn't change.
Right.
So, therefore, because that doesn't happen, I think that this is another good proof that, in all honesty, something has shifted, and so that Discovery and Strange New Worlds are completely in their own timeline and their own, you know, string of of quantum theory. You know, there's because this can't fit now at all with what we know, which again I think is freeing for the writers here. And is very, very smart moving forward because it the same way the Kelvin timeline did, this allows them to do whatever they want. You know, it doesn't, you know, well, the way they used Kirk here shows they don't want to completely destroy canon or go against it. They're going to play with it, but this allows them that freedom. And to me, this episode, I mean, am I wrong, Chris, that you that it feels hard to argue with now that this is not the prime timeline?
Well, It's sort of hard in the sense that I agree with you that it feels like it's a different timeline. The thing is that the creators believe that they are in the prime timeline. So that's the difference between the Kelvin for me and this, is that with the Kelvin films, they clearly set up at the beginning that it's an alternate timeline. And from there, they're going in an alternate timeline. Here, I really believe that the creators see themselves as working in the prime timeline, and somehow they're filling in the back history and they're going to make it fit together at some point. But they increasingly are making it more and more difficult for themselves to make it fit together. And that's just where I don't know. I don't quite know how I feel about it, because, yeah, I do agree with you that it does feel like this is a different timeline. And yet, I know that that's not what they are trying to do. And so I don't quite know where that's, I don't know where it's going. As far as this whole thing with Khan here, I thought about this quite a bit after the first time and the second time I watched this. And I went back and I did some very quick research, and I'm not going to come down on any definitive position on it here because I haven't had time to do the amount of research of past Star Trek elements that I need to do to actually be sure that I'm correct in what I'm saying. So if I get something wrong here, you know, don't send me 1,000 tweets about it. But the idea that the temporal Cold War and other factions like these Romulans who, you know, this is not part of the temporal Cold War, but they are doing things that are similar to what was being done then. The idea that all these things are happening and it's causing events in history to shift so that they take place later on the timeline is interesting. And the idea that Sarah presents, that it's almost as if history and events are trying to reinsert themselves. Like every time you pull them out of the timeline finds some way to reinsert this event, which is what she's describing with Khan.
Right.
And she says, all this was supposed to happen in 1992, and I've been stuck here for 30 years. But even that, that doesn't clearly connect with what we know. It's almost like a superficial explanation of something that the writers watched in Star Trek and didn't remember how old Khan was. All of this wasn't supposed to happen in 1992. The eugenics wars were supposed to start in 1992 to 96. And during that time, Khan rose to power. But Khan was, I don't know, 30-something maybe at that time. I don't know if we know his exact age. I'd have to go and do more digging. But he was an adult, clearly an adult. He wasn't a child. So all of what we're seeing here wasn't supposed to happen in 1992. And if you go back to Picard season 2, the explanations that we get about Project Khan and how the augments were originally created and so forth, that fits better with the age that Khan Noonien Singh would have been during the eugenics wars, but it also doesn't fit together. So throughout, and there are mentions in Enterprise, there are mentions of the eugenics wars and, you know, Archer's grandfather, I believe, was connection to it. And so it's been mentioned here and there, and the times have gotten jumbled a lot. And so I don't quite know how it all really fits together. But another thing is the idea that maybe the eugenics wars and World War III happen more towards the middle of the 21st century, because I believe there's a line from Data at one point that Earth was recovering in the early 22nd century. And so it would make more sense that would be from a war that happened in the middle of the 21st century, not in the 20th century. So time gets all jumbled. And so my rambling here is that I'm not sure that the attempted explanation of how they're shifting these events that was given in the episode actually meshes with what we know. But if they want to shift the times, I think it's okay. What they're trying to do, I feel, is that they're trying to make Star Trek continue to fit into our history and our timeline. But the problem is that the events, you know, our own timeline and the one that was foreseen in TOS has already split.
Right.
Because we're not on that path anymore. And if you want to move the eugenics wars and say, well, you know, these wars, they happen a little bit later, but it's not going to impact the original series. Ultimately, we can make it fit together. What do you do next? We're only 40 years away from first contact with the Vulcans,
right.
And that's not going to happen in 2063. So if you're still writing Star Trek in 2065,
right.
And we didn't meet the Vulcans, are you going to shift first contact then and make that happen like in the middle of the 22nd century? So you could go down this hole endlessly trying to shift things to make them fit into our timeline, and you're never going to catch up, right? You're never going to make it all fit together. So that point that I've heard given that we're going to, it needs to fit into our history and stay relevant. So we're going to shift stuff if we need to. I'm not sure that actually makes sense.
Right. I don't think it makes any sense at all, because it doesn't work, because you're never going to be able to do it. Also, I think Star Trek is created as though it is a almost historical documentary.
Yeah, and, exactly. Yeah,
but it doesn't have to be our future, right? But to still inspire us as to what we could be, right?
Exactly.
And so I think there's a completely ridiculous idea, and I do call it ridiculous, that this has to be our future to be able to inspire us to a better future. You know, Gene only said that this could possibly be our future, right? But it wasn't, it's not going to be our future because it can't be. I think
it would have been incredible if he had accurately
predicted
everything that was going to happen in the coming decades.
So I think that this is where I see it being better for them to just allow this to be in a different universe anyway, because then they can have the freedom that they need to tell the stories that they would like to be telling in this time period, because we've already talked about it. So I don't want to beat a dead horse, but you know, they're already butting up and like body checking. And I think this episode, it does more than body check. It kind of like knocks out canon. And like you said, there's a way you could try to, you know, stitch things back together. But at this point, you've made the tear so large. I mean, it's like trying to stitch the Grand Canyon back together.
Yeah, that tear is so large. I think only Riker and a joystick flying around could repair that tear. I
mean, and that's not going to happen, you know? So, oh my gosh.
But I mean, ultimately for me, though, is that it doesn't really matter that much. I think like you're saying, do we have to make it all fit together? Does it have to be our history, our timeline to inspire us? And of course it doesn't, because the strength of Star Trek has never been that it's foretelling our exact future path. It's that it's inspiring us to strive for a better future and to be better people and to treat other people better. And it does that regardless if it's in this timeline or the Kelvin timeline or the Prime timeline or whatever timeline you come up with. And for me, ultimately, it doesn't matter if you're telling really good stories. And this episode is a really good story. And it's really well put together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. And it's Star Trek. It's purely Star Trek. And I mean, I don't know if they had DuckDuckGo and Apple stores in Star Trek in the past, but you know, I just, at some point, it's one thing if you're writing something over a period of 10 years and you're going to try to make it all fit together somehow, but when you get past 50 years, you can't go back and change the television episodes and the movies that were filmed in the past. And anything you try to do, it's going to be contradicted by past creative. It's just going to be. And so I personally would prefer that this is prime timeline, because I want a story that leads more cleanly into the original series. But I also want good stories, and I don't want stories to be watered down just to try to make the pieces fit together.
Well, and I think I would say there that the two aren't mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. And so this is where I'm coming from. So this is just my opinion, and it's the internet, so everybody tell me if I'm wrong. But you don't have to be doing what they're doing with these stories and quote unquote body checking canon to mm-hmm. tell good stories. You don't have to do that, mm-hmm. but they are choosing to do that. So by making that choice, they're putting themselves in this between a rock and a hard place position. That's mm-hmm. their fault. Mm-hmm. So I think that, again, they're not mutually exclusive. You can do both well. They're just choosing not to. And so because they've made that choice, to me, the cleaner thing to do is to just admit we're not in the prime timeline. Whatever they choose to do, they'll mm-hmm. choose to do, just as they already have been doing. But to me, that makes it easier than because of the choices you have already made. And so it's a really interesting thing. I'm surprised at this choice, but like you said, and I just, you know, we've talked through the whole episode here, but mm-hmm. this was an easier, I guess, especially after the last 2 weeks specifically, mm-hmm. I found this episode so much easier to be able to digest, and partly mm-hmm. because I felt like it was a character story about La'an and trying to get her over the hurdle of dealing with this last name, dealing with mm-hmm. this past that she can't change, right? She has nothing to mm-hmm. do with, and yet she has mm-hmm. to live with. And now it's allowing her to be able to let go. And I think that lesson, that's such a beautiful lesson here for so many of us, right? This idea of learning to let go of the things that we can't change, right? And I like that so much. And I think this is a great episode. And what this really made me want was it absolutely made me want more stories with this character, because I think she's fascinating mm-hmm. and really interesting and phenomenally acted. And so I mm-hmm. this was great. I'm going with 4 out of 5 stolen items from a Roots store in Canada, because I found this to be an extremely impactful episode.
That's great. Just don't get caught. just drop something in someone's bag. And but yeah, no, Christina Chong was fantastic in this episode. Such a good performance, and especially the ending. I mean, the emotion that she's able to deliver through a character that's so guarded is fantastic. And I'm wondering where the character is going to go if she now opens up a little bit. And I think she's a very versatile actor.
Yes.
You've seen it in when they've done playful things as well in Strange New World. So it was really great. And yeah, I guess I've said my whole bit about this episode as well. I thought it was fun. It took a little bit of time to get up to speed for me in the beginning, but it pretty quickly did and was a really fun ride all the way through. So I'm going to give it 9 bargains from the archaeological department, which, you know, I thought was like an actual institution, but anyway. All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. To find it, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, and it should come right up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. It's a closed group because it's there to be an extension of the conversations we have on the podcasts, and you can share your thoughts with fellow listeners, with Matthew and me right there on the timeline. You'll see a post for this episode. And we'd love to hear your thoughts there. You can also send us email if you like. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose Saddle Up. And your message will mosey its way right on over to Matthew and me. And of course, you can always find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to find the seams in the bunny suit, where can people find you?
Well, you could find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero are all the places I am most active. Of course, here on the network, you can find me on the 602 Club, where we don't talk Star Trek, but we talk about all of those other fandoms we love. So we hope you'll check that out. You'll also find me doing literary treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek, The Orb, where Chris and I talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Warp 5, we talk about Star Trek Enterprise, and of course, The Artificial Tango, where we're talking about Star Trek Picard, and we've got more for you coming there, so don't worry. Also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with two shows, one called Owl Post, all about Harry Potter, every single chapter of that series, one chapter at a time, and Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out where exactly in Toronto you can find a good hot dog, where can people find you?
Yeah, Toronto's got a lot to live up to if they're going to meet those Sneaky Pete's I had back in Birmingham back in the day. Maybe a few listeners remember that. But when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network, of course, with you doing those shows that you mentioned. Also, there's The Ready Room with Larry Nemechek from time to time, and you can find me in the back catalog in a lot of episodes of a lot of shows over the past 14 years. And you can find me on social media. I'd love to chat with you there. My username everywhere is C Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Twitter's where I'm most active, but you can find me on Mastodon, Blue Sky, and all around. And I'd love to talk to you about Star Trek or whatever there in social media. And if you'd like to help us keep Saddle Up and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to get involved and how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without you. It takes a great deal of money to produce and distribute these shows. So thank you to everyone who's supporting us now. And if you're not, we really hope that you will consider doing so. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to getting back in the saddle again next week to see what Strange New Worlds has in store for us, because, you know, with the series, you never quite know.
Well, Chris, I can't wait to get there, so hit it.